Great. Okay. So just to recap a little from last week, I gave an overview of this class, which is called Practice Realization Expression, Dogen's Path of Creative Enlightenment, which is kind of a mouthful, but you know, I like words. What can I say? I introduced a few questions to think about. You know, how do we express our understanding of the Dharma in our lives? Or to turn that around, how does the Dharma express itself through us? How are we expressions of Buddha nature? And last week I talked about how the Zazen meditation that Dogen taught and the kind that we practice here is different from other forms of meditation. In Japanese it's called Shikan Taza, which means just sitting. And it's an objectless and goalless meditation, which means that there's no object, there's no mantra or visualizations. We tend to start with the breath and we count a little bit, but then we let that awareness go as well. And it's quite an advanced practice, but in Zen we just kind of start at the top of the mountain, you know, realizing at the same time that there is no mountain, right? So, and it's also a goalless practice. It's not about, you know, gaining enlightenment or salvation or anything else like that. It's not some kind of personal or spiritual self-improvement plan, although Dogen doesn't rule that out either. Self-improvement is great, right? We all love self-improvement. And it's not about getting, it's about letting go. And so, as I said last week, in that sense, you could call it useless, right? It's a fairly useless practice. It's not a means to an end, but it's an end in itself, which I always think is kind of like making art or, you know, writing novels. And then, too, I think in our world, the world that we live in now, this very materialist, goal-oriented world where everything has to have a measurable outcome, this practice that we do, this Zazen practice, Shikan Taza, is really incredibly radical. And I think it's becoming more and more radical as we become more and more materialist and goal-oriented. So that's cool. I think, you know, Dogen lived, you know, 700 years ago, 1200. 1200 to 1253. So, you know, this practice that he originated back then, or that, you know, that he helped to popularize back then, is becoming more and more radical, and you know, as time goes on. So when we practice Zazen, our practice and the realization of our practice, in other words, our enlightenment, our awareness, are one and the same. They're one and equal. And instead of seeing meditation as a means to a spiritual end, Dogen views Zazen as the necessary expression of our inherent Buddha nature and our awakened awareness. And I talked about how Dogen's term for this practice realization in Japanese is Shusho Itto. And I think it's important to note that Dogen didn't just make this up. He didn't just sort of pull it out of thin air 700 years ago. Shusho Itto has its roots in early Chan, Chinese Zen Buddhism, and along with this notion that we have an original Buddha nature. So last week I started out with a story about the Buddha's life and his quest for enlightenment. And so I thought this week we could take a very quick look at Dogen's life, especially his early life, and then move from there to looking at Fukan Zazengi, the piece that I read during the meditation practice, because that was his very first writing, the first writing that he did when he came back from China. So I'm getting ahead of myself. Dogen was born in the year 1200 in Kyoto, which was the capital city of Japan at the time. Dogen was not his given name, and in fact, we don't know what his given name was. It seems that his father died when he was quite young, and after that, he was adopted by a minister of the Minamoto family, and those were his words, so we can probably believe them. The Minamoto family was one of the two powerful ruling samurai families of the time. It's likely that his adopted father was also his uncle, okay, Michitomo Minamoto, who was a renowned poet and the compiler of a very important volume of Japanese poetry called the Shin Kokinshu. And so this is important because it gives you a sense of the kind of family that Dogen grew up in. You know, he grew up in a literary family and was probably well-schooled in both Chinese and Japanese poetry at that time. The facts about his early life are quite sketchy, but it seems that his mother died when he was 7 years old, and that's seven by the Western system of counting. In the Japanese system, when a child is born, they're 1 year old. Okay, so by a Japanese count, he would have been eight, but by a Western count, he was seven. I think that's kind of interesting that a child is one when they're, you know, when they're born. Yes, that's right. And then there's a legend that describes how... His mother died when he was 7 years old, and there's a legend that describes how during his mother's funeral service, he watched the smoke from the incense rising and dispersing in the air and had his first sort of deep realization of the impermanence of all things. The story about the incense may or may not be true, but later on, Dogen himself wrote, realizing the impermanence of life, I began to arouse the way-seeking mind. Okay, so we do know that his early realization of impermanence, the impermanence of all things, was somehow connected with his desire to practice Buddhism. The legend also has it that his mother urged him to become a monk in order to save all beings. 5 years later, when he was 12 years old, he visited another uncle, the poet monk Ryokan, who lived in a small hut at the foot of Mount Hiei, in the northeastern foothills of Kyoto. And shortly after that, he ascended the mountain and was ordained and became a monk in the Tendai school, which is the monastery on Mount Hiei. And it was the Tendai school was one of the two powerful schools of Buddhism at that time in Japan. This was the point at which he was given the Dharma name Buppo Dogen, which means Buddha Dharma, source of the way. So Do is the character for way, as in Tao, right, the way, as in Aikido or Judo or in Chado, way of tea. And Gen is the character for origin, okay, so way origin or way source. At the Tendai Monastery on Mount Hiei, Dogen received kind of basic monk training and studied the scriptures, studied the sutras. And the Tendai tradition taught the doctrine of Hongaku, which is the doctrine of original enlightenment, that we are, you know, that we all have Buddha nature. And this raised a serious doubt in young Dogen's mind. Okay, you know, the daily monastic practice was very rigorous and very, very hard. And so Dogen questioned this. You know, he said, why, if we're already enlightened Buddhas, do we need to practice at all? And I really love this because if there's one thing that we know about Dogen from his later writing, it's that he had a serious contrarian streak, right? And at this point in his life, he was clearly a precocious and smart kid, and he was a teenager. Okay, so if anybody has ever had encounters with teenagers, right, you can completely understand this, right? Like, you know, hello, why should I practice? You know, I'm already enlightened, right? And I think that there's actually what he actually said, and this is what he was purported to have said. My doubt arose after reading numerous sutras and sastras, both the exoteric and esoteric teaching maintained that all sentient beings originally share the Dharma nature and naturally have the body of self nature. If this is the case, then what reason would all the Buddhas of the triple world have to aspire Buddhahood? Okay. Which is another way of saying, why should I practice? Right? And either way, it seems to me to be a kind of a reactionary question, you know, exactly the kind of question you would delight in asking, you know, your elders if you were a teenager. The quote that I just read comes from the Kenzaki, which is a biography of Dogen, written 200 years after his death. So there's some doubt about the reliability of it, and about the reliability of a lot of the biographical accounts. But even if it is apocryphal, it's as a story, it's still important because of the questions that it poses so neatly. You know, is there a contradiction between fundamental Buddha nature and a need for continuing practice to attain enlightenment? You know, if we're already enlightened Buddhas, why do we need to continue to practice Zazen? So in a way, this was the first koan of Dogen's life, and one that he, in essence, devotes the rest of his life to teaching. And I think koans are interesting because they often consist of a paradox. You know, at the heart of a koan is very often a paradox presented in some kind of story form. And I always think of it as a little kind of time-traveling meme, you know, that has traveled through the centuries, through the millennia, and somehow, you know, originating sometime in China, you know, 1,000 years ago, and then, you know, just sort of traveling generation by generation by generation, sort of winding its way around the planet until it, you know, comes up right now here. And we can think about it today. And very often, you know, that meme kind of changes in the translation process as it sort of worms its way through time and space. You know, Suzuki Shundu, who was who brought this practice of Soto Zen to America in the 1950s? Early 60s? Okay. Had another way of expressing this, which I think is really lovely. He said, "You are perfect just as you are, and you could use a little improvement," right? Which is basically another way of talking about the same paradox that that Dogen, as a young man, ran up against. So the Kenzaki goes on to recount that Dogen, young Dogen, who was still in his teens, was unable to find an answer to this question that he had on Mount Hiei. And he was also disillusioned with the monastic bureaucracy. So he went in search of answers in Japan and studied with different teachers. And finally, in 1223, when he was 23 years old, he eventually made his way to China, where he found his primary teacher, Lu Jing. And he stayed in China for a total of 4 years. In 1227, he returned to Japan in order to bring the Soto Zen teachings back to Japan and back to his people. Now, shortly after he returned to Japan, he wrote the Fukan Zazengi. And so I'd like to spend the rest of our time today sort of looking at this text. Just a couple of points of the Fukan Zazengi, once again, can be translated in and has been translated in many ways. Recommending Zazen to all people, universal promotion of the principles of Zazen, universally recommended instructions for Zazen. You know, there's many different ways of translating this. But what they all have in common, and once again, what I think is really radical, is that Dogen is teaching Zazen not just to monks, you know, and monastics and senior practitioners. He wants to teach Zazen to all people, right? And so it's that profoundly sort of democratic and all-inclusive, you know, spirit of the Dharma that he brought back and wanted to propagate, wanted to share in Japan. The Fukan Zazengi is one of the standard chants now in our Soto Zen services. And it's Dogen's first piece of writing, and he wrote it when he was 27 years old, which once again I just find amazing. And what's really nice too is that apparently he rewrote it many, many times, you know, and continuously rewrote it until he was about 45 or 46 years old. And, you know, he died at 53. So this also I just love, because I too rewrite things over and over and over again. And so I find this very encouraging. And as I said, Fukan Zazengi is his first attempt to teach Zazen, the Zazen that he had learned in China, to the Japanese people. Okumura Shohaku, who is a wonderful, wonderful Buddhist teacher, Zen teacher, and scholar, did a translation of I guess the second of Dogen's writings, Bendowa, which is the wholehearted way. And Okumura Sensei, he did a lot of translations of Dogen's early work, writing. And he says, I think Fukanza Zengi is Dogen Zenji's most important writing. In a sense, Bendowa, the wholehearted way, is a commentary on Fukanza Zengi. Not only Bendowa, but all of the Shobogenzo, the treasury of the true Dharma eye, which is a huge collection of Dogen's writings. All of the Shobogenzo and Dogen's other writings can be seen as commentaries on the Fukanza Zengi, in that they are his commentary on the practice of Zazen. Fukanza Zengi is the center of Dogen Zenji's teaching based on Zazen. On the foundation of our sitting, we should create our way to encounter each thing in our day-to-day lives. And so that's Shohaku's sort of commentary on Fukanza Zengi. And it's true that in the Fukanza Zengi, it contains all of the basic ideas that Dogen will spend the rest of his life teaching, like Shusho Itto, the practice, the oneness of practice and realization, the notion of suchness, just this, which in Japanese is immo, the dropping away of body-mind, the self-fulfillment samadhi, or self-enjoyment samadhi, and also his teachings on non-separation and non-duality and all-inclusiveness. So it's a text, the first text that he wrote when he came back from China, and in it are the seeds for all of the other teaching and writing that he did until he died at the age of 53. So, what I'd like to do is to really take a look at Fukanza Zengi, and actually, maybe what I'll do, are everybody comfortable? Do you want to squirm a little bit? Why don't you just take a moment to squirm? And I will too. I'm as we squirm, I'll tell you that, you know, one of the things that I'm suggesting is that everybody take up a creative practice for this retreat period. And one of my creative practices is going to the gym and working with a trainer. And one of the things I'm realizing, you know, and the idea is, you know, how is the creative practice, can the creative practice somehow feed back into our zazen? You know, can it inform our zazen in any way? And one of the things that I'm realizing is that my creative practice of going to the gym is, in fact, changing the way that I'm sitting zazen, in that I'm very aware now of, you know, when I'm sort of misaligned or when my body hurts or, you know, something like that. So that's my report. It's working. Okay. I think what I'd like to do is I think what I'd like to do is read the Fukanza Zengi out loud to you. Okay. So get comfortable. Get comfortable. You can feel free to close your eyes if you fall asleep, you fall asleep. That's fine too. But just, you know, in different religious traditions, there are different practices of reading, and I've always been very interested in the Catholic practice of Lectio Divina, right, which is a way of listening and reading out loud and contemplating and interacting with a text. So let's think of this as sort of the first stage of a process of interrogating this text. Okay, and so I'll read it to you first, and then I'll pass it out. Recommending Zazen to all people. The real way circulates everywhere. How could it require practice or enlightenment? The essential teaching is fully available. How could effort be necessary? Furthermore, the entire mirror is free of dust. Why take steps to polish it? Nothing is separate from this very place. Why journey away? And yet, if you miss the mark even by a strand of hair, you are as distant as heaven from earth. If the slightest discrimination occurs, you will be lost in confusion. You could be proud of your understanding and have abundant realization, or acquire outstanding wisdom and attain the way by clarifying the mind. Still, if you are wandering about in your head, you may miss the vital path of letting your body leap. You should observe the example of Buddha Shakyamuni of the Jeta Grove, who practiced sitting up straight for 6 years, even though he was gifted with intrinsic wisdom. Still celebrated is Master Bodhidharma of the Shaolin Temple, who sat facing the wall for 9 years, although he had already received the mind seal. Ancient sages were like this, who nowadays does not need to practice as they did. Hence, you should stop searching for phrases and chasing after words. Take the backward step and turn the light inward. Your body-mind of itself will drop off and your original face will appear. If you want to attain just this, immediately practice just this. For Zazen, a quiet room is appropriate. Drink and eat in moderation. Let go of all involvements and let myriad things rest. Do not think good or bad. Do not judge right or wrong. Stop conscious endeavor and analytic introspection. Do not try to become a Buddha. How could being a Buddha be limited to sitting or not sitting? In an appropriate place for sitting, set out a thick mat and put a round cushion on top of it. Sit either in the full or half lotus posture. Loosen the robes and arrange them in an orderly way. Then place the right hand palm up on the left foot and the left hand on the right hand, lightly touching the ends of the thumbs together. Sit straight up without leaning to the left or right and without bending forward or backward. The ears should be in line with the shoulders and the nose in line with the navel. Rest the tongue against the roof of the mouth with lips and teeth closed. Keep the eyes open and breathe gently through the nose. Having adjusted your body in this manner, take a breath and exhale fully, and then sway your body to left and right. Now, sit steadfastly and think, not thinking. How do you think, not thinking? Beyond thinking. This is the essential art of Zazen. The Zazen I speak of is not learning meditation. It is simply the Dharma gate of enjoyment and ease. It is the practice realization of complete enlightenment. Realize the fundamental point, free from the binding of nets and baskets. Once you experience it, you are like a dragon swimming in the water or a tiger reposing in the mountains. Know that the true Dharma emerges of itself, clearing away hindrances and distractions. When you stand up from sitting, move your body slowly and rise calmly without haste. We understand from past precedents that going beyond ordinary and sacred, where sitting and standing are effortless and boundless, depends solely on the power of Zazen. Furthermore, bringing forth the turning point by using a finger, a pole, a needle, or a mallet, or leading people to enlightenment with a whisk, a fist, a stick, or a shout, cannot be understood by discriminatory thinking. How can it be understood by the use of supernatural powers? Zazen is an awesome presence outside form and color. How is it not the path preceding concept? Thus, do not be concerned with who is wise or who is stupid. Do not discriminate the sharp from the dull. To practice wholeheartedly is the true endeavor of the way. Practice realization is not defiled with specialness. It is a matter for every day. Now, in this world and in other worlds, in India and China, Buddha ancestors equally carry the Buddha seal and teach the practice of sitting immersed in steadfastness. Although circumstances may vary in 1,000 ways, wholeheartedly practice Zen, giving yourself fully to the way. Why give up the sitting platform of your own house and wander uselessly in the dust of a remote land? Once a wrong step is taken, you depart from the way. Having received a human life, do not waste the passing moments. Already upholding the Buddha way, why would you indulge in the sparks from a flint? After all, form is like a dewdrop on the grass. Human life, like a flash of lightning, transient and illusory, gone in a moment. Honored practitioners of Zen, please do not grope for the elephant or try to grasp the true dragon. Strive to hit the mark by directly pointing. Revere the mind that goes beyond study and surpasses all things. experience the enlightenment of the Buddhas, correctly inheriting the samadhi of the ancestors. Practice thusness continually, and you will be thus. The treasury will open of itself for you to use as you wish. Written at the Kannon-dori Monastery on the 15th day, the 7th month, the first year of the Tempuku era, in 1233. Okay. So what I'd like to do now is to pass around these, okay, and there should be enough copies for everybody, and there's 2 pages each. So why don't I start? Okay. And while we're passing things out, if you'd like to stand up and stretch and move your limbs about, that would be probably a good thing. We're also going to be passing out notepads and pens for anybody who doesn't have one. So, and I think I'm going to turn this off briefly.
Press once.
Okay, so that was step one, and I forgot to turn on the recording device, so I'm just going to repeat that instruction, which was to read the text silently to yourself and mark phrases or words or passages that stand out to you for any reason without any need to analyze, just whatever you noticed or what you felt yourself drawn to. And so now that we've done that, what I'd like to ask you to do next is to, using the pads that I've given you, to choose one of the passages or one or two of the passages that you've marked that had some kind of either, it pulled you or you didn't it confused you or, you didn't like it or, whatever. Choose one of those and respond to it. Just as though you're, just in whatever form you'd like. This can be very, very open-ended. You can, talk to the text, argue with it, complain to Dogen, write him a letter. One nice thing that I've always found in situations, like this, is to just simply list all of the questions that come to mind. You just take a short passage and ask as many questions as you can think of, about that passage. That's a way of kind of getting things flowing. You can take the phrases and the words and turn them inside out, just play with them in any way you'd like. Dogen did that all the time, so there's a good precedent there. You can write a dialogue, you can write a poem, you can respond in any way on the page that you'd like. And there's no expectation here. You don't need to feel self-conscious about, about what you're writing, because you're not going to be sharing it. This is just really just an exploration, okay? And so we'll just write like this in a very open-ended kind of way for about, 5 minutes or something like that. Okay, and just take another minute or so to finish up whatever thought is on your mind. And then what I'd like to ask you to do next is to form small groups of 3. Let's try 3 and see where we get to. And if 3 doesn't work, then 4 would be fine too. But just, just sort of, you don't have to travel off to dusty lands. You can just, why leave the seat, Just change its orientation slightly. How's that? And yeah. And if it ends up being a group of four, that's fine too. It's not a big problem. Turn the fan off?
Yeah.
You think?
People don't have to.
Oh, okay. 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 I'll get it. Yeah. Okay. Okay. And so then, so what I'd like to ask you to do is to just, use the things that you've been thinking about as a point of departure for a discussion, and take turns. And I'll ask you to sort of time yourselves so that there's about a couple minutes for each person. Okay. And share some of the thoughts that you've been having. If you'd like to read what you've written, that's absolutely fine. Or if you'd like to just speak it, that would be fine too. Share a little bit about your response to the Fukan Zazengi, and take about 2 minutes or so per person. I think that should be a good place to start. And you can kind of time yourselves. I'm not going to be ringing bells or anything. Okay.
I wrote a letter. I wrote a letter to the Thursday Darkness, and I don't know.
Why don't we all sort of reorient our cushions? So what I'd like to do is just, I think it would be nice to sort of share out a little bit of what you all talked about in the small groups. Anybody have any, comments or questions or issues that came up, or, observations or complaints or, anything else? It would be interesting. Yeah.
Well, we seem to be confused. And it seems to center around the issue of effort and all of this coming, all of this wonderful stuff coming, the true Dharma emerging, and mm-hmm. all the stuff that we are really, we want it, we like it, we want to attain it. And he says, if you want to attain it, do this and this and this and this and this. Well, do we want to attain? He says we should not, and he uses the should word a lot. It's like a swear word now.
That's great.
Maybe a classical Japanese, it doesn't quite sound the same.
Well, it probably does.
Although, it probably
does. It probably does. It's probably worse in classical Japanese. Actually, this was written in Chinese, I think, but... Mm-hmm. But it probably is even more imperative, mm-hmm. I would imagine. Mm-hmm. No. That's just a guess. I don't know that for sure. Yeah. I doubt it's a gentle suggestion, however.
A question came up at the end of our three. Biographically oriented question, and had to do, well, if you understand the Buddha's life story as an ascetic who tried A, tried B, tried D, and then finally said, this is my big shot. I'm going to sit under the tree. Either I get it or I don't. And this is the final thing. Then how does that fit with all this, just take a step back, or it's natural? That whole thing, that his whole path seems to be a great deal of striving. So that was one thing. And it occurred to me, occurred to one of us, that there's an emphasis, at least by the paragraph endings, on the metaphor of vital path, body leap. That's taking a step backward, those metaphors of leaping and stepping. That sounds great. And they always follow after wisdom, the mind, some sort of dichotomy thing as opposed to body-mind. So it occurred to me, well, we're reading this. What can we, by reading this, what are we doing? We're not leaping. We seem to be going in the direction of wisdom.
Well, I mean, and it's, you know, hence, you should stop searching for phrases and chasing after words. You know,
yeah,
take the backward step. But yeah, exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
Why not?
Yeah. Anybody else? Yeah.
It struck me as at times that he was desperate to give us an opportunity that we would, the least we would be. And so he said, like, you should do this. Really pay attention. And so these strong words and strong, you know, strong messages, let's say. But it was, I felt a certain desperation there. Come on, you guys, you can do it, you know. Just sit. And don't chase this, and do, you know, give all kinds of detailed instructions and so forth. But so wanting us to appreciate our position as we are, you know, that kind of quite. We both work with children, and so we were talking about how you just desperately want the kid to make this change or do this or learn, you know, something because their very life is in danger in the work that we do. So, you know, you can feel that desperation.
Yeah.
So, like, sometimes I feel that way when I was reading this.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's lovely.
Well, we could call it youthful zeal. Right?
Yes, it's also, he's young, exactly, yep. He's young.
He just came back from China.
Yeah, he's 23.
And people in Japan,
27,
were really
stuck.
Well, things had gone pretty slack. Some of them were really slack, and some of them were out actually beating each other up and being mm-hmm.
Yeah, there were warring monks. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So things were. So he really was. There was an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
He was wanting to share his practice.
And when you think about it, too, in that sense, given the, you know, the sort of upheaval that was going on, a backward step is once again a pretty radical, you know, it's kind of a radical prescription.
Well, I can echo some of the things that were said. The idea, one thing, the paradox, he says, you know, strive and effortlessness, these kind of things that both go on. One comment was, you know, the Buddha often talked about, and I think this is true perhaps for much of the Indian literature, you know, this kind of careful explanation, like, you know, sit, you know, like not too tight, not too loose, like the string of an instrument, right? Whereas Dogen and the whole approach is like, gives you these different paradoxes, these different images, and says, now you find the way.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't explain.
Yeah.
I mean, for all his, you know, sit on the mat, not too hot, not too cold, it's like, okay, now you go beyond thinking.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
That's great. Yeah.
To me, the whole thing feels like a koan.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's full of paradox
mm-hmm.
and seeming contradictions. And my experience of it, that there were, like, I really love that we were choosing phrases that spoke to us because there were some phrases that spoke to me in a way that was very inspiring.
Yeah. Yeah, nice. Yeah.
I appreciate what was just said, and to that end, I also think that there's somewhere in here, at least I pulled it out, and so I give it meaning then, but writing sort of the end of the, what you have marked as the third, the last paragraph of the third section, I feel like he touches on the middle way, and that, you know, between striving and effortlessness is daily practice. And that it's not special, it's very ordinary, and it's something that we just do every day. That's sort of what I read from that. So.
Yeah. Nice. Nice.
Oh, I just picked out the phrase, you could be proud of your understanding and have abundant realization, or acquire outstanding wisdom and attain the way by clarifying the mind. So I sort of separated those two phrases and kind of dissected them because I didn't understand it at first, but it seemed to me that it seemed like it's inherent, so you can be proud of it, and the abundant realization is there, or you can do the reading and have the mentors and the teachers to then unclutter your mind. So again, that's the paradox of having it, but also looking for it externally as well.
Yeah. Nice.
Well, I approach this in a whole different way.
Good.
Let it roll off my head, and whatever came out, came out.
Good.
So I'll read it if I've got the guts here. So I wrote him a letter. So this says, Dear Dogen, I'm having a hard time choosing just one phrase. I'm concerned about missing the mark with the slightest discrimination. Well, I'm almost always missing the mark then. Yet, isn't missing the mark also the way? To miss the mark is to attain the mark. The mark is the mark, in spite of missing or attaining. How could effort be necessary? Bad girl, good girl, either, both, girls, I don't know what this word says. Zazen does zazen. The way moves its own way. I am left where I am, hanging from a branch on a cliff by my teeth, speechless, in confusion, in doubt, in awe, in the Dharma, out of the Dharma, without words or letters. Oh, to be free of words and letters, to be free of worries about forgetting them. Let them go with the wind. You keep fanning yourself for me. I will keep sitting for you, for all beings.
Dogen thanks you.
It was fun.
That's great. Anybody else have anything they want to call out or share or anything like that? Yeah.
Well, I got kind of caught up in that image of the mirror and whether it has dust on it or not, and does it matter, and should I be looking at it or not, or is that just looking out, or is that reflecting? I got kind of caught up in that.
Yeah.
I didn't figure it out.
No. Good. Good, yeah.
I just have a question. How literate would the society of the 1200s have been? Would they have been reading Dogon? Or would they have been receiving this information through oral, or how?
Do you want to... I'm not sure who he was... actually
writing for
or speak. I mean, I think that it probably was... It varied, right?
Yeah, there were later writings that he actually wrote for lay people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there were literate lay people.
Yeah.
And the monks were literate. Yeah. So relatively speaking, I mean, obviously there were peasants who were less than literate, but anyone's a relatively literate society.
It was the most literate society in the world.
In the world at the time, actually. Yes.
Which is, it was the 1200s, though.
So. Up until modern times. Yeah. And still today, it's one of the most literate societies. Yeah. Yeah.
The one thing, though, is that Fukan Zazengi, this text, he did write in Chinese. So, and the reason being that, you know, most Buddhist texts, all Buddhist texts actually up until that point, if I'm not mistaken, were written in Chinese, even by Japanese, right? Because that was the way they were transmitted. And Dogen then did a remarkable thing, which was that he started to write in Japanese, which was the first time, I think, right, that had ever been done.
So that's why this is not in part of...
Exactly, the Shobogenzo. That's right.
The Shobogenzo is actually written in Japanese.
Yeah. And so Dogen did break the language barrier, and moving the Buddhist teachings from Chinese into Japanese, so that, I mean, it would be like the Catholic Church, you know, moving from Latin to, you know, vernacular. Yeah. So that was, once again, a big step. Yeah.
For me, having sat prior to doing this, and for the morning, and then...
Yeah.
I took the part where it was like when you're finished sitting to calmly get up, and no haste, and I know that of myself. The times that I'm desperate to break out of the posture, give myself some relaxation, some break, and so I just sort of followed that little paragraph, and at the end of it, he says the power of Sazen. And it was like, as I explored it in that experience of writing, it was like I came to a place of feeling like I was charged. It was initially like a battery, and then because I'd been hearing a physicist talking about things they're finding out about the Big Bang and creation, it sort of immediately became that. And it was this sense of the restraint that we are asked for, which ends up being a charge that goes into my being that's beyond thinking. And to keep it going, not to sort of throw it away in haste as I stand or move out of the posture. So it was kind of an interesting place to come to with his final words of that paragraph, power of Sazen.
Interesting. Cool. Anybody else have anything to... Yeah, sure.
I got caught up with all the animals.
Good.
And I got so caught up with the animals and the concept of there being a direct turning, a direct point, a mark, something that's fixed, and then the fixed admonition gets spun around. So it felt like a compass, like an astrology wheel with different animals about it, and the spinning center. And at the end of it, it really didn't matter where you stood on the compass, because they all led to something that eventually brought you to the end of the text. And that was the fun of it.
Yeah.
Because the process wasn't in getting hooked up with the archetype of any image or any particular direction, but was just the process of getting spun around.
Yeah.
So that was the end.
That's great. Thank you. Good. Yeah.
Can I ask, would we have any idea how long it would have taken him to write this?
I think he did it quite quickly, and in fact, I think it was a couple of months or something. It seemed to have been quite, you know, soon after he got back from China, he wrote it.
I almost think of it as one sitting.
Yeah. Oh, that level of detail, I don't know. I don't know. But don't forget, he did rewrite it over and over and over again, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, and
different versions
of it. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, good. I think we'll kind of wrap it up there. But I wanted to give you a suggestion for home practice, and that is to, you know, once again, kind of keep this, you know, keep the sheet, and if there's a phrase or a sentence or a word or an image or something in there that, you know, that interested you or spoke to you in some sort of way, then take it and copy it down. Copy it out on an index card or a piece of paper or something that you can, you know, put in your pocket, you know, or in your wallet, and keep it with you for the week. And just look at it from time to time and think about it, or you can put it on your altar, you know, and sit with it and practice with it and see if it changes. Maybe it won't, maybe it will. See if it, you know, if any kind of new, you know, sort of meaning comes out of it. In a way, you don't really have to, you know, you can take his suggestion here and not even think about it analytically, but just hold it as a sound, almost as a you know, as a phrase, as a piece of poetry, as just something that is with you, a kind of an ambient accompaniment just to your day-to-day life, and see what happens. See if anything interesting comes from that. You can also, if you're doing some kind of creative practice, you could turn it into a part of that creative practice. So, for example, it could be you could write, you know, a poem around it, or you could, you know, photograph, you know, using that as a kind of a inspiration, or you could, you know, paint, or, you know, write a song, or you could bake it into a cake, or, you know, you could sew it into a quilt, or, you know, whisper it to your child, or any number of things. So that might be an interesting way to think about it too. And I recently just had I was flying to Seattle to do a talk there, and I landed in Seattle Airport, and I noticed that the minute, you know, the fastened seatbelt lights went off, everybody in the plane whipped out their iPhones, you know, their smartphones, and started, you know, because they've been offline for like, you know, 35 minutes, you know, and I did too, right? But I caught myself in that moment, and I suddenly realized that, you know, that I'm a novelist, right? And so I need to be paying attention to the argument that the couple three seats in front is having about the baggage, and, you know, there's just all of this stuff going on that I am not noticing because I've got, you know, because I'm checking my email, right? So I suddenly had this idea that since the craving to check texts and to check email is constant, and it comes up over and over again during the day, that to use that craving itself as a prompt to not do that thing, right? And so at that moment when the craving comes up, you know, don't check the email, but instead look around and notice something concrete that you would have missed otherwise. Right. Notice what's going on next to you in the bus, or notice what somebody is saying, or what they're wearing, or, you know, some ambient piece of information. Just that alone. And so I've started doing that this week, and I suddenly, you know, I realized that there's, you know, how much I miss by constantly staying tethered to that device. So I offer that up as a fun practice maybe as well this week. Great. Thank you very much, everybody. Have a good week. Have a good Thanksgiving.
So next week we will start at 1. So please get here, you know, a few minutes before 6:30.